will beat this disease. This is a global fight, and it's one that America must continue to lead. Looking back at the history of HIV/AIDS, you'll see that no other country has done more than this country, and that's a testament to our leadership as a country, but we can't be complacent.
In 1981, the Centers for Disease Control issued its first warning about a new disease. Many had trouble naming this disease, understanding and caring for the people who were infected, and facing down their fears.
Federal health officials consider it an epidemic, yet you rarely hear a thing about it.
But people would not be silent. Communities mobilized to fight AIDS. In San Francisco, Kampala, Bangkok, across the planet, communities comforted people as they died from a disease we could not treat. Communities fought for respect, care, equal rights, and to celebrate the lives of those lost. Scientists worked to understand HIV, ensure the safety of the blood supply, and develop a test for the virus. We held the first international AIDS conference in Atlanta in 1985, and finally, we developed the first treatment for AIDS, AZT, in 1987. Individuals and communities mobilized governments, whole regions, and eventually the entire globe to prevent the further spread of HIV, develop new ways to treat infections, and to respect and care for those affected. We gained the knowledge to create stronger medications and found new tools to prevent HIV transmission. Instead of watching people die, we turned to helping people live. In the United States, we are working to develop treatment to all who need it. We launched and supported global efforts to fight disease with science, compassion, and a faith in our ability to make a difference. And countries around the world stood up to fight not only HIV/AIDS, but the fear and stigma that had held us back. Now, together, we are saving lives and scaling up. We can see an AIDS-free generation. We can turn the tide on this epidemic.
On behalf of Americans everywhere, welcome to the 2012 International AIDS Conference. Thank you for your commitment to achieving an AIDS-free generation here in America and around the world. We've made great progress, but there's still a lot of work to do. So let's move forward together.
Welcome, y'all. It's a pleasure and an honor to be back in Washington, D.C., in the U.S., and to make this session possible here. My name is Luis Lores, and I work for UNAIDS, and I am your moderator on this session. This morning, when I was leaving my room, I found this outside the door. AIDS is going to lose. In less than 24 hours that we are into this conference, I think there is a message coming out and clear. This is the conference that will mark the journey to end AIDS. We heard that yesterday. We heard this morning in the words of Secretary Clinton and many others that spoke. We came a long way in 30 years. In the three decades of the epidemic. And I was engaged very early. I know what I'm talking about. I was taking care of AIDS patients much before treatment was available, and I know what this epidemic means. But a unique combination of scientific progress and social mobilization brought us as far as we are now. This session will follow the trend. We will follow the trend of the progress of the journey to end AIDS. But we are here today to challenge ourselves, to go a step further. This session is about qualifying the end that we want. To illustrate, take progress on treatment. We have 80 million people on treatment, the highest ever. But we have 7 million people to go, waiting to be treated. The question that we need to ask ourselves, who are they? Where are they? The 7 billion that need us now. I can tell you that they are in Eastern Europe, where only 22% of the people need of treatment that are getting it. They are in Asia, where people with AIDS, only 44% of the people with AIDS have access to treatment. They are in Africa, they are elsewhere, where punitive laws and criminalization have pushed us back in terms of provide prevention and treatment and to fight the AIDS epidemic. 78 countries today, they criminalize some sex relationship. 16 countries, they go for death penalty. We have the same situation, even bigger in terms of sex works. More than 100 countries today, they criminalize sex workers. There is no end of AIDS in this kind of world if we don't change this reality. These people, they are exactly the ones that brought us this far. And we should never lose that respect. They were the ones that first step to stand for a response to AIDS globally. That's a historical truth. We cannot change history. But now are the ones that we need to pay tribute to, that we need to bring with us to the end of the epidemic. This session will discuss and examine what you take us to build partnerships that can concretely take us to the end of AIDS. But you want to end that you not leave anybody behind. And that is the word. This is the bottom line of the session. End of AIDS altogether. Nobody should stay behind. We have I have the honor and the pleasure to share and to moderate a panel with very distinguished people coming to here, champions in different areas. Let me start with the lady. Don't worry, the women on the floor. You are very well represented with Vice President Helena Salgado at stage. Helena Salgado is the former Vice President of Spain. She is the former Minister of Finance of Spain and the former Minister of Health. And she is very strong. She was the first woman to face the crisis that started to go in Europe and the global. We will be speaking more about as we move. Farid Abdullah, the one in the, on the corner there, he's just the head of the most powerful AIDS program today in the world, the South Africa AIDS program. I think that saying all, you had his deputy president telling us how proud they are of the leadership that they are taking today. My friend, James Shaw, my dear friend, my young friend, James is from CCTV China.
Come on, Luis.
Again, not to take too long, who is James? James is the main anchor of CCTV today, and he speaks daily or very often to 400 million people across the world. That's his audience. That's his reaching today. James has 1 million followers on Twitter. Then you can see young, but with a lot of experience, a lot to bring to us. James as well, and we have a special honor on that, is a UNAIDS good ambassador. And finally, my dear friend, one of our guides, John McGrew. John McGrew is a leader on the corporate world. But John is moving his leadership now to make the bridge between the corporate world and the response to AIDS. And I can tell you, he has been very successful. Where you heard yesterday that we had 100,000 less of cases of mother to child transmission during the last year. John's part of that. His contribution to that has been fundamental for us to be here. He's bringing the corporate world behind the journey to end the AIDS. But now, we want to go to the end. And I think if we think about, I try to briefly describe to you the challenge of inequity ahead, we need a revolution. I think all the conditions that we have so far, the progress that we have achieved so far, give us conditions to go to the end. But we need a revolution. We need to change. We need to innovate. We need to make sure that nobody will be left behind when we reach the end. And for that, we need inspiration. We need inspiration at the global level. We need inspiration not to millions, but to billions. And who could do that better than Sir Elton John? I have it's my pleasure and join me to welcome Sir Elton John to join us and to deliver his keynote speech. Elton John, as you know,
they are letting me.
Thank you, Luis, and good afternoon to you all. I'm extremely honored to be here, and I'm going to begin with a story. It is the story of a young man coming to terms with his sexuality. A young man who got mixed up in drugs and drink. He took chances with unprotected sex, and he was at the very high risk of contracting HIV. This young man hit absolute rock bottom. His life was a mess. He was self-destructive. He was angry. He was spiraling out of control. He should have died, to be honest, and he almost did. But then, something amazing happened. People showed him compassion and love. People showed him respect and understanding. People offered him a hand and a chance to get better. And he did get better. He turned everything around. He has a wonderful life now. A loving partner and a beautiful son. And he's been sober and clean for 22 years. And now he's standing in front of you, giving the speech. Ladies and gentlemen, by all rights, I shouldn't be here today. I should be dead, 6 feet under in a wooden box. I should have contracted HIV in the 1980s and died in the 1990s, just like Freddie Mercury, just like Rock Hudson, just like so many friends and loved ones of yours and mine. Every day I wonder, how did I survive? I don't know the answer, and I never will, but I do know why I'm here. I'm here to deliver to you and to anyone who will listen the message that saved my life. The message that can save millions of lives if we put it to practice. No matter who you are or who you love, no matter where you live or how you live, no matter what you have or haven't done, everyone deserves compassion. Everyone deserves dignity. Everyone deserves love. Why am I telling you this? Because the AIDS disease is caused by a virus, but the AIDS epidemic is not. The AIDS epidemic is fueled by stigma, by hate, by misinformation, by ignorance, by indifference. There's so much talk now about the end of AIDS, and rightly so. We can end AIDS, thanks to you out there. You have made it possible. Because of your research and your advocacy, we have life-saving treatment and we have prevention. But that's not good enough. It isn't good enough to beat this disease once and for all. You know it, and I know it. We need more than medicine. We need more than money. We need love. Now, if that word makes you feel uncomfortable, if it makes you feel a bit uneasy, if you associate it with Disney-esque schmaltz, let's pick another. Compassion, kindness, understanding, empathy. Call it whatever you like, but the idea is the same. We need more humanity, more love, if we're going to end AIDS. I've just been to the unfolding of the AIDS memorial quilt, where I saw so much love for the dead. What we need now is more love for the living. Cynical people will say, oh, how can a sentiment possibly beat a virus? That's an easy question to answer, especially for the people in this room who have dedicated their life to ending AIDS. It's been 3 decades of this epidemic, and we've seen how human beings react when those around them become HIV positive. There are some people who look at the sick and search for reasons to blame them. She's got HIV? It must be her fault. It's because she's a drug user or a prostitute. He has AIDS? It's because he's gay, because he's poor. They must deserve it, these people. They live immoral lives. They deserve to be sick and to die because they brought it on themselves. And then there are people who look at the sick and think of reasons to love them. You're ill? I'll be ill one day too. You have personal struggles? So do I. You're dying? There will come a time when I am also dying. How can I help you? How can I love you? After 31 years and 30 million people gone, we have seen both responses, you and I. We've seen hate in Uganda, stigma in Ukraine, indifference in America. We've seen gay people targeted, discriminated against, and even killed. We've seen people living with HIV ostracized by their families and stigmatized by their communities. We've seen AIDS orphans abandoned in the streets, children raped and abused. It makes me feel sick. All of this fear, all of this ignorance and hate. But we've also seen love, haven't we? We've seen monks working with drug addicts in Thailand. We've seen social workers helping HIV-positive prisoners. Corporations putting lives ahead of profits. We've seen Catholic nuns and priests helping sex workers in India. And I know that Jesus is smiling down on them despite what the Vatican may say. We've seen George W. Bush and conservative American politicians pledge tens of billions to save the lives of Africans with HIV. Think of all the love. Think of where it would be, where we'd be without it. Nowhere. That's where. We'd be nowhere at all. Thanks to all this compassion, thanks to all this love, more than 8 million people are on treatment. Thanks to people who have chosen to care and to act, we can see an end to this epidemic on the horizon. It's not a mirage. It's real. It's very, very real. But it's going to take a lot more compassion to get us there. A hell of a lot more. So how exactly can compassion get us to our destination, some may ask? Let me tell you. Do you want to end new infections amongst injection drug users? Well, you're not going to do it by locking them up and leaving them to die of isolation or addiction or AIDS. That only spreads the disease and the suffering. We need to give these people support, clean needles, and treatment. Instead of judging them, let us help them. Instead of despising them, we need to love them. Do you want to curb new infections with MSM in Africa? You're not going to do it by stoning gay men and passing laws against homosexuality. For Christ's sake, this is the 21st century. Show compassion to all of your people, like President Joyce Banda of Malawi does. If you show compassion, no one will be forced into the shadows. If you show compassion, no one will be afraid to seek treatment. Do you want to stop the epidemic in South Africa? Then show compassion by telling those living with HIV to be proud of knowing their status. That's what the South African government is beginning to do, and it's working. We need to put our arms around people who are HIV positive. Celebrate the actions of individual change. Celebrate people who are willing to get tested. That's the compassion that will help get everyone tested and on treatment. Do you want to end the epidemic in America? Then show compassion to those who can't afford treatment and are on waiting lists to receive it. Show compassion for HIV-positive people in Washington, D.C., most of whom are poor and black and forgotten. Even though they live in the capital of the richest and most powerful nation on earth. America. America has shown so much love for those living with HIV in the developing world. If this country wanted to end new infections at home, it could do so in a heartbeat. All it takes is a bit more funding and a bit more understanding. All it takes is dialogue and the power of words to change actions. All it takes is the compassion that my friends Elizabeth Glaser, Elizabeth Taylor, and Larry Kramer and Ryan White taught us about decades ago. Maybe you think I'm naive. Maybe you think I'm off my rocker. Well, here I am telling an audience of 7,000 global health experts that we can end AIDS with love. I know we need more than that. We need prevention programs to be funded. We need treatment programs to be expanded. We need critical research to continue. We need a vaccine to be discovered. Everyone at this conference is united by the dream of universal treatment, prevention, and a vaccine. We dream about it every day, you and I. And God bless everyone who is working to make that dream a reality. But even if our dreams come true, even if we had a vaccine, it wouldn't be enough. A vaccine won't end stigma in Eastern Europe. A vaccine won't end homophobia in Uganda. A vaccine won't end rapes in South Africa. A vaccine won't help poor people who can't afford it in Asia. A vaccine won't change laws in America that criminalize those with HIV. Science can stop the disease, but science alone can't end the plague. Yes, we now have accurate and inexpensive at-home tests for HIV, but we can't convince people to get tested if they feel that nobody cares about them. Why would you bother if you're told by society that your life doesn't count? Yes, we now have miraculous treatments that double as prevention, but we can't get those living with HIV on treatment if they're afraid to disclose their status because of stigma or homophobia. Yes, I hope and pray that we will all discover a vaccine. We all do. But we won't get that vaccine to those in need if governments shun their most marginalized citizens. That is why compassion is critical. That is why love is the cure. Millions of people around the world feel ashamed because of who they are. I felt ashamed when I was a drug addict. Because of their HIV-positive status, because of their sexuality, because of their poverty, they feel marginalized and left out. They are ashamed because they feel they've done something wrong by how they live their lives, or the disease they have, or who they love. They feel subhuman, worthless, like they don't matter at all. Shame and stigma prevent them from getting help, from getting treatment, from protecting themselves in the first place. I felt that shame before. It almost killed me. It's killing people all around the world right now. We have to stop it. We have to replace the shame with love. We have to replace the stigma with compassion. No one should be left behind. That is how we will end the plague. In 1995, I released a song called Believe. In one verse, I sing, I believe in love, it's all we've got. Love has no boundaries, no borders to cross. Love is simple, hate breeds. Those who think difference is the child of disease. I truly believe that love is the most powerful force in the world. I know that from experience. During the darkest days of my recovery from addiction, I was shown extraordinary compassion by people I didn't even know. People whose names I never even learned. Nurses who worked at the clinic where I was recovering from in treatment. Other patients who didn't know me as Elton the rock star, only as Elton the addict. Everyone around me was kind. Everyone was compassionate. Everyone was forgiving. Their love changed my life. It saved my life. The gift of love from a community of people who believe in you and support you is the most remarkable gift you could ever receive. It doesn't cost anything at all, but it's the most precious thing in the world. Everyone deserves it. Not nearly enough people receive it. But we can do something about that, you and I. We must do something about that. And when we do, I promise you, we will wake up from this 31-year-old nightmare into a brand new day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elton John. That was beautiful. I think we all share the end of AIDS the way that Sir Elton John see it. And that's the message that I think we heard. I think it's bringing us back on time. When we start to deal with AIDS, before technology, before treatment, before drugs, before diagnosis, was the social movement that brought us this far, that motivated even progress of science as never before. Probably, Sir Elton, you managed to summarize in one word what was the drive before and behind the social movement on AIDS, is love. I don't know if any of you in the room has Sir Elton John book, because my book I gave to the deputy president of South Africa. I have one. Marcy Elton just published a book where he goes more on that. He goes more on detail. And what is called love is a drive. It's a way to be human. It's a way to respond to the humanity to be better and goes beyond the AIDS. Now I would like to take the opportunity to get some reactions from panelists. And start with you, Farid. Sir Elton mentioned South Africa more than one time in his speech as an example, as a challenge. I was commenting with the deputy president this morning that I think there are two messages already coming from this conference. America's commitment and South Africa leadership in terms of changing the tide of this epidemic. Farid, you have committed much more money to the response to AIDS. But what's your vision? Where we are going in terms of further than just provide drugs, further than just provide diagnosis? What's your vision? Where you want South Africa to be in terms of the social mobilization to end AIDS?
Thank you, Louise. And thank you for inviting us to say a few words. Just to start with some basic but staggering statistics. Over the last 20 years, 2 million South Africans have died from HIV. That's just a staggering figure. And our government and civil society quickly came to the conclusion that government alone cannot deal with a problem of this magnitude. And that's why we have in South Africa the South African National AIDS Council, which brings together government, private sector, civil society, labor, and everybody working in HIV. Not so that we control the response, but that we all work together to have one response against one plan. I always have a caveat when I say that. That there should always be extremes, because we must always allow, you know, on each side, room for people to be different from the mainstream. What's also critical in this partnership is that we have created a place for the ultra poor, the most marginalized. And in our council, the deputy president of the country has a similar status to the sector leader from the LGBTI sector or the sex workers. Because we, like Elton said earlier, know that if we can't go to where the problem is, if we can't work with the people who truly suffer from this disease, then really we're missing the whole point of the response. So there's a special place for marginalized communities in the South African response. Now that doesn't mean that the level of services for marginalized communities is anywhere where it should be. But I think it signals the clear intention to build partnerships. And so we're working now with the sex worker organizations to build a national sex worker program. And on Friday last week, our deputy president met the gay and lesbian community, to discuss the murders of gays and lesbians that have been taking place in South Africa's townships. And really the point is that, you know, we need to build these proper partnerships to do these things. Especially with the announcement over the last couple of years of new prevention tools, such as PrEP and early treatment, in addition to all the strategies that you heard Tony Fauci talk about this morning. There are real opportunities now to make a big difference for communities marginalized. In our new national structure, we also have a much bigger place for the private sector, because we think that our response has been seriously lacking in professionalism, in efficiency, and in an entrepreneurial spirit. And we're hoping that the entrepreneurs, the businessmen and women in the country, will be brought center stage into the response. It's not only that they have the expertise, but they also have the responsibility. I should just say that a few things about the South African response which perhaps are not better known. The first is that, having the largest epidemic in the world, we feel that we should lead by example. And our government, in a general period of economic downturn, where we have borrowed more money this year before finalizing the budget than since the day that Nelson Mandela became president 18 years ago, where our growth forecast is, like yours here, you know, well below 2 to 3%, South Africa has increased its HIV budget 15% per year for the next 3 years. And we think that all governments of the world should follow this example. This is not a time. This is not a time to be cautious or to second guess the steps we're taking. A lesser known statistic about South Africa's expenditure and its commitment now is that we spend more money on HIV in South Africa than all the funds that the Global Fund spends in all of Africa. And once again, that just shows that, you know, we understand the gravity of the problem, and the financial response needs to equal that. My last point really is to say that we don't think that we are alone in this. This is a global problem, and unless we work with partners across the world and build partnerships, we won't make the kind of progress that we hope to have. To make. I'm sorry, I've taken too much time, Louise, but thank you for the time anyway.
Thank you, Farid. You deserve as a South Africa. You are the lead. I think it's fine to hear Farid. As many of you know well, being here today, the social movement is going to a major challenge in terms of its sustainability, because money is needed. And money needs to be made available by governments to keep civil society moving. This is not the appendix to the AIDS response. This is the center. And the governments that do not understand that will miss the journey to the end of AIDS. Government needs to cash. Your government, any government, need to put money on the social movement, on civil society, on NGOs. Vice-Presidenta Helena Salgado, you, in my culture, a president, a vice president, you'll be forever a vice president and the president, mainly you. You have been on the center of the crisis, managing that until very recently. However, we know very well, even with the example of South Africa, that discounts cannot be alone. Global solidarity is a major, major factor for the AIDS response to go. We cannot retreat. Money in South Africa, commitment in South Africa, cannot be used as an excuse for donors from the North to retreat from paying for AIDS, because that's a global epidemic. A challenge for you, Vice President, but you went through many challenges. What must these partners, the classic donors, continue to bring to the table? How you see the next phase in terms of the response to AIDS? How could keep the commitment of the traditional donors to the AIDS epidemic?
Well, thank you, Luis, and thank you for being here. Well, I think economic crisis cannot be an excuse. It can never be. But even less now that we can foresee the end of AIDS. But I think we have together to catalyze new ways, new approaches to cooperation with emerging development partners rooted on national ownership, solidarity, but also mutual benefits. I foresee some new approaches to this cooperation around three pillars. The first, smart money, which means money allocated where it's more useful, but also new innovative ways of funding. Because it's true that some public budgets are almost exhausted, but we have to look for new ways of funding cooperation. The Tobin tax, that is the financial transaction tax, a tax on mobile phones, a tax which means that we have to cooperate in a different way with the private sector. I think all these ways can produce money to be allocated where it's needed. The second pillar has to be mutual accountability. Now the Western governments, we are much more under public scrutiny. Every dollar, every euro that we spend has to be discussed in an open way and sometimes through the social networks. So we have to go far beyond the classic accountability, no corruption, efficiency and effectiveness, to a social accountability, which means that no person can be left behind, that the money has also to go to the most vulnerable groups, that nobody can be without the treatment they need. And of course, we have to use this partnership to impulse that our partners approve laws against stigma and discrimination. And this has to be part of this new approach of cooperation. And the third pillar, very much related to the previous one, is the law enforcement. Because passing good laws is not enough. Take, for example, the law that we approved when the first law approved when I was in government, the law against violence on women. By the way, I have to say that 1 year later, the socialist government approved the homosexual marriage, and we continue with many, many advanced laws. But without educating the police, without addressing the way in which prosecutors and the judiciary system is going to interpret the law without giving clear instructions to the health workers. The law should have only been a printed paper. So the law enforcement is as important as the law itself, because if a sex worker, if an immigrant, if a man who has sex with other men, or if a drug user is afraid of going to the police stations or going to the health services, then we cannot put AIDS to an end. We have to pursue that the end of AIDS is without leaving any person behind. AIDS is not coming to an end for itself. We have to push, we have to bring AIDS to an end, and we have to do that with resources, with care, with compassion, with love, but also with a firm will not to leave any person behind.
Gracias, Vice President. John, next to you now. We heard from Farid, we need the government. We heard from the Vice President, donors, the classic money, needs to continue to be there to respond to AIDS. Sir Elton John, you'd allow me probably to say that we need love. My love is country leadership, with government support, love with money from donors. And now to you, what about the corporate world? John, as I said before, he came to business on AIDS. He is a very specific target, and he's been successful. That, I think, is the best that we can learn from the private sector, is really how to go to results, to impact. But it's still a question there. We need to go to scale. We need much more involvement of the corporate world, of the private sector. What kind of incentive, John, you think we need to put forward to make this happen? How to bring the corporate sector to this revolution, to the end of the AIDS problem? Over to you.
Great. Thanks, Luis. And thank you, Elton, for all that you do for and have done for decades around this. I'm here really first as a father, someone who spent a lot of time in Africa and rural Africa and townships with my family, with my children, and have had for a long time now exposure to this. And so I think, like many people, what you really need is exposure to trigger, to ignite that passion. And I'm really the voice right now in a particular area for the private sector, but only one voice of many. And as I've jumped into this and pulled together many companies, you have, first of all, a group of companies that have been legendary in this, in their support around this. You know, companies like Chevron, many of you are here today, or Anglo American, J&J, and others I don't want to leave out, but who have been really in the forefront for a long time around AIDS, around mother-to-child transmission. But I find this turning the tide together very appropriate for business as well, because everywhere I go and talk to people like GE, JP Morgan, my friend Chris Stadler, who's here, who is one of the senior leaders at a global financial firm, CVC Capital, marketing companies, NBC Universal, that's jumped into this full speed, WPP, Apria Healthcare, one after another, these organizations understand that this is something that is doable, that they can make a big difference, and are prepared to invest not only money, but one of the most important things that the private sector can invest is human capital, technical assistance, and those kinds of things. And I really feel that wave building. I'd say it's a big wave already. It's not a tidal wave. It will become a tidal wave because of what's going on globally and the amount of education and the things that all of you are doing. And I'd say as I go around and talk to these companies and help get them involved, there's a few key messages that come out of that. First is you really have to focus on employee engagement and even a step beyond that, executive engagement. This has to be something that gets ignited at the top level of these companies. Because as that happens, it pulls it out of what I would say normal community and social responsibility into a much greater focus area, something that corporations, employees feel right now is doable. They feel that it's really big, and they feel it's measurable and has a very significant payback globally, not just a payback to them as a corporation, but something that they, with their footprint, with their network, with their resources, can really feel that payback. Now, I was asked to really focus on a smaller issue within this, preventing mother-to-child transmission, and there's 330,000 babies born still every year HIV positive, which is just absurd. Because it's really a genetic lottery of where you were born. If you happen to be born in the United States, but close to 0% odds, born to an HIV-positive mother, close to 0% odds, you're going to be born with HIV. If you're born to an HIV-positive mother in Africa and you're not, and the mother's not treated, it's probably 35%, roughly percent chance that the newborn is born HIV-positive, which is just crazy. The technology there, it is solvable, it's not expensive, and so it's really a question of how to implement and how to develop country plans and continue to have the right kind of government support and private sector support around this. And I would say, as I go around to corporations, that focus on mother-to-child transmission resonates tremendously. It's about mothers. It's about children. I think it's something they can get their arms around very quickly. But they also understand this is an entry point. As you solve the testing, treatment, and follow-up issues around mother-to-child transmission, you deal with clinics and community health workers, medications, logistics, all the things that are required from a healthcare system standpoint. HIV can follow in that, frankly, in the trail of that, frankly, many healthcare issues that exist in Africa and other developing nations can be solved. So the tide has turned. The corporate community is committed. The private sector is committed. It's growing massively every day. And I can vouch for that because I'm talking every day to these leading executives.
John, thank you very much. Yeah. See, the challenge on any sector that's getting involved on AIDS, that's not the usual ones, the health sector and so, is how to convince people and stakeholders to get involved also on the hard issues, to really put the money where we need it to deal with intravenous drug users. Men have sex with men. Sex works, and there we go. I think, and examples like the example that John shared with us, you take us there. But James, you are the youngest here on this panel. The exposition of your generation to AIDS was very different of the exposition that my generation had to this epidemic. However, we need your generation more than never before in the history of AIDS if you want to go to the end. There is no way to go to the end if young people do not take the lead. The call for an AIDS-free generation should come primarily from the generation that's going to take the lead today. How to do that, James? How can we move there? How to keep young people mobilized at the world that we live today, a world of progress?
Well, I'm 34 years old, so I'm almost as old as AIDS itself. I think, first of all, when you look at new media, it's amazing what opportunities they offer all of us, especially young people, Facebook and Twitter. What they do is that they give us a voice. They allow us to voice that voice, and they allow us to identify other voices. But more importantly, what they do also is that they allow us to find ideas that are different to our own. New ideas, original ideas, innovative ideas. But we must be very careful. You cannot think that just one person posting on Facebook is going to create a real and sustainable change. It's very difficult. What it requires is for all of us together to do that, to create a unified voice and to move forward together. And also we have to remember is that most people in this world today do not have access to Facebook and Twitter. Like in my country, where there is no Facebook and Twitter, like in many parts of the world, 300 million people in India who don't have access to basic power supply, let alone an internet connection, let alone to a computer. That's my first point. Yes, you can have this, but do it in parallel with something else. Keep it very simple. Build around your realities. Find an affordable tool. And I think that's going to be the mobile telephone, still the mobile telephone, not a smartphone, and just your text messaging service. You find this very, very cheap, cheap model so that no one gets left behind. Like what you said, nobody gets left behind. No family gets left behind. No community is forgotten. Who knew that in Africa today, the number of subscribers of cell phone services has gone up by 20% every single year for the last 5 years. And in China, where I live, more people surf the web through their phone than they do through a laptop. And even here yesterday on this stage, we heard Secretary Sebelius announce the new You Care for Life partnership between the United States and also the MacAIDS Fund. This is what I think innovation is. Innovation doesn't need to be sexy. Innovation doesn't need to be expensive. Innovation doesn't need to be complex. But the very last thing that I will say is how we position that message and what message we have. I don't think it's good enough just to go out there and put out a text message saying, use a condom, it can save your life. Take a pill, it can save your life. I think you need to use all these things, and you need to create a social movement around demand. A demand for rights, a demand for health, a demand for sexual rights, a demand for knowledge. And if you do that, people will not be bored after one or two messages. People will keep on coming back. They'll start demanding. They'll say, I want to know more. They'll say that I want to live a better life. If Apple can sell millions of iPads, I think it's not so difficult for us to convince billions of people to care about themselves.
Thank you, Jack. I would love to open the floor. That's how I think things should be done. But I'm sure there's me as the panel. And all of you, we don't want to miss the opportunity to hear again from Say Alto. And I think we are this panel in a very short time, because 1 hour is a challenge to have a panel like that. But things are emerging. I think Elton John made the call for lobby. We are qualifying that lobby with governments commit to lobby. Donors commit to love. The private sector commit to love. The young people and the young generation take the lead for love to be the drive to the end of this epidemic. But Cyril, how will we go? Where will we go from here? You came, you gave us your land, but we need to go further. We cannot stop. Where we go? And that are the concluding remarks by Cyril Donjon.
Thank you, Luis. We go forward by holding hands together. We all need to combine our talents, our knowledge, our technical ability to get the message across about AIDS. And we are doing this. I'm very optimistic. I'm a Luddite. I have no idea how to tweet. I can sing, but I can't tweet. But what James is saying is so important. Getting the message across to people. It's revolutionary the way communications can help people now. Look what happened in Egypt. Look what happened in Tunisia. Look what happened in Libya. It's very important. This is a very important point that he's making. For me, it's a question of role models, too. In the last few months, we've seen an incredible change in attitudes in America towards, for example, gay marriage. And also within the African-American community. First of all, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, made the most amazing speech. And then the Vice President made a speech. Then the President endorsed gay marriage. And then Jay-Z, who is one of the most respected artists in his field in the world, made an incredible statement supporting gay marriage and saying any criminalized and discriminatory behavior in the world is wrong. for him to have said that as an African-American and as a hugely respected person, it meant that the dominoes fell. 3 days later, the NAACP said yes, and then Colin Powell said yes, and then Frank Ocean, the hip-hop singer, said yes. It was like a domino effect. All of a sudden, knocking on the door to the African-American society was not a problem anymore because people had stood up to be counted. It would be great if HIV-positive people would stand up and be counted. There must be some role models out there. We haven't had one since Magic Johnson. We need people to say, it's okay to be HIV-positive. Look at me. I'm leading this life. Look, I'm okay. People treat me good. We need to move forward in that respect. But we need to embrace each other. We need governments not to cut funding. Obviously, that is such an important thing. I wanted to focus my speech today on the human side of AIDS. But obviously, there are a lot of other things that come into the equation. And funding is so important. Without funding, we'll get nowhere. The governments must still keep their budgets open to where they were before with AIDS, even in this terrible economy that the world is going through. And then we can see the end to this epidemic. I honestly believe that before I die, I will more or less be seeing the last remaining people infected with AIDS. I want my son to grow up in an AIDS-free world. You go to South Africa and you see the new teenage generation saying, we want an AIDS-free next generation. You see the mothers who are now on the antiretroviral drugs planning an AIDS-free generation. That's what we must look towards. We must make sure everyone gets access to these medications. We must carry on the fight. We must keep battling and knocking on the door of the fascists and the hate mongers in the world. The people. I mean, Ukraine 2 weeks ago, they were going to pass this law outlawing any mention of homosexuality, sexual acts, or whatever. I said something on stage, and it wasn't because of me, but they shelved it. They didn't in St. Petersburg, but they shelved it in the Ukraine. We must keep battling these people. There is more love and more positivity in the world than there is hate. I truly believe that. I really honestly. I know I sound idealistic, but if you don't have a vision and you don't have a plan, then you are nowhere. And my vision is for people to be much more tolerant of each other in every way possible, to be more compassionate, and then we can all embrace this idea of getting rid of AIDS, getting rid of the cost, not only human lives cost, but of the incredible cost of billions and billions of dollars a year, and put it to good somewhere else. We can beat this disease, but we need to do it together. And we are doing it together. And all you people out there are helping. God knows how you're helping. So thank you for coming today. Thank you for listening. And let's have an AIDS-free world soon. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you all very much for coming. Today is Monday. We have a few days to go. Be the messenger from now to Friday. We want the end of the epidemic. We are going for. This is what this conference is about. But you want to accept the end where people is not left behind. Expand the message from Sir Elton John in the sessions that you'll be participating from now until Friday. We can move forward, we can change the tone of this conference and really move to the end that we all want. Thank you all very much. Thank you, the panelists. Sir Elton John, that was a beautiful session. Thank you all.
Excuse me.